Thought for today. Do the worst first, the rest is easy. Do the worst first, the rest is easy. Do the worst first, the rest is easy. Now, we have three little holes on the side of the tape, the disk of the computer here. One is for input, one is for output, and one is for something else, probably the microphone. And if you put the input in the output, then you will not get any output, because the output is for the output and the input is for the input. And whenever you violate the principle of input and output, you, instead of getting a lot of something, you get nothing. And that's where the nothingness comes from in the world. So, do the worst first, and the rest is easy. All of you are going through a very interesting situation right now. You have your tail mixed up with your head. And by that I mean you think that you are living in absolute consciousness while you are living in relative consciousness. And you think you are living in relative consciousness while you're living in absolute consciousness. Now, Herb, those two things don't fit. Oh, they fit very well. Absolute always is. Richtig? Correct? Relative always is. Correct? Yes. Now, when you live in relative, you do not know absolute, because you know all the details of relative. When you live absolute, which is everything, the allness, the isness, and everything, you have not the capacity to know the relative, because knowing the relative would move you back to the relative. If I say to you, when you're playing three chess games with three different people, and I say, oh, just a minute, Ellen, what move did you make here with your last person in chess? Ellen must shift gears from the chess game she has just moved to, mentally go back to the chess game that she just finished making a move in, remember what the previous move was and where she moved to. She doesn't remember where she moved to, she has to remember where she moved from to know where she moved to. Because if you don't know where you moved from, moving to someplace doesn't make a lot of sense. And so, in chess or any other part of life, you have to know where you came from to know where you're going to. And all of us have had a big problem with that. We are trying to go to something, and we don't know where we're coming from. And because we don't know where we're coming from, we cannot get to where we're going. Because we do not know who we are, where we came from, we cannot get to where we're going to be who we are. Now, who are we? Are we absolute? Are we relative? What game are we playing? If we get confused in the game we're playing, we're going to find the game an impossible thing totally. Now, if we do the worst first, we'll find the rest is easy. If we take care of our relative world first and live in it according to what we have designed the relative world to be, 100%, then we can move on to our awareness of our absolute self. If you have chosen to play a game, and the game is being a human being, and you know the rules of playing the game of human being, you say, well, no manual came with you. Well, it certainly did. It's on your hard disk, right? You buy a computer and they have the manual on the hard disk, and if you can't get inside the computer to read the manual, how do you read the manual to know how to run the computer, which is on the hard disk, you know? Well, anyhow, that's the way we are. And we have the same problem that an unopened computer has. You can't get to the manual. If the computer is not turned on, you can't even begin to think about going to the manual. And you and I, if we are not turned on, we cannot think of going to the manual. What does the manual tell us? Well, in a flash, when you're drowning, when you're dying, when you're having a near-death experience, in a flash, your entire life in Technicolor passes before your consciousness. We say before your eyes, before your consciousness. It cannot be your eyes. Your eyes are able to only work at so many megahertz, you know. They're only able to click at so many points and receive information and acknowledge that information and understand that information. We can actually do it much faster, but we have trained ourselves to do it rather slowly. So, our entire life can pass before our eyes in a flash, even shorter than a flash. And we basically remember everything that has flashed before our eyes, even though we did know it because we lived it, but now we are reminded of it as a study session, an intensive study session for an examination. We're going to die. We're going to move into another dimension of living. And so all of our life flashes before our eyes in preparation for moving into that next dimension, because we have to see if we have passed all the tests that we have given to ourselves. And if you haven't passed the test, then you don't get into that next dimension. You got to go back and finish your work. Now, there are a lot of people who commit suicide. Every death is a suicide, but there are a lot of people who knowingly and purposely and instantly commit suicide by putting a gun to their head or some other silly thing. So, what are these people doing? Are they getting around having to do what they came here to be and do? Or are they just putting themselves on another activity level of remembering everything that they remembered up to the time that they shot themselves in the head, that they committed suicide? Each one of us, we're far enough along to know that, do we know where we came from? Do we know where we're going? Do we know what game we're playing right here and now? Is this game interesting to us? Do we want to skip a couple grades and move ahead on the game and ignore many of the areas that are necessary for advancing in the game? Apparently many people do. And as many people do, they get themselves in a great difficulty. And the great difficulty is not that they're doing anything wrong. Please don't ever interpret anything I say that I'm telling you you're doing something wrong. Even if I shout at you and scream and stamp my feet, try to get your attention, I am not saying you're doing something wrong. I'm just saying, do you hear what you're saying? Do you hear what you're saying when you say I can't? When you say I don't know? When you say that somebody else is disturbing my calmness, my equanimity? You know, do you know what you're saying when you do that? Mm-hmm. You're saying you're not the master. You're not the master of your body, your life, and your affairs. You're not the master of your world. What you're saying is that somebody else is the master over you, because they are touching you and they are leaving their impressions on you, and you're shook up by them. Now, I offered you a possibility of working on your mastership, but I see that it has fallen on deaf ears. I offered you the possibility of working on your mastership by saying to you, you are the only person on the face of the earth. You are number one. You are the creator of your world, and you have created whatever appears in your world, and you play the game with whatever appears in your world. If your little child comes up to you and says, Mommy, how do you play chess? You don't say, Son, that's a very technical game, and when you're older, I'll teach it to you. You say, son, I wanted to learn how to play chess myself. Let's learn together. And so you get out the book, and you read it. In sincerity, I hate to use that word, insincerity, because it sounds like you're insincere, but with sincerity, you take out the book and learn it with your child. And at the same time, you expect that child is going to be brilliant, and he is going to pick it up very quickly. Don't expect he's going to be a slowpoke. Even if he might be mentally retarded, don't expect him to be a slowpoke, because people are usually mentally retarded in only certain areas. And who knows what you might stimulate by calling out the best. Okay, so you learn the game together, and you play it with sincerity. And playing the game of chess, you realize certain men can move certain places and certain things. And you got to remember the rook, the pawn. You got to remember the knight, the castle. You got to remember the king and the queen. You got to remember all these things. And you got to remember what kind of moves they can make. But you see, when you're learning the game with your child, you just say, oh, look, this is this. This is the rook, this is the pawn, this is the knight, this is the castle, this is the whatever. You know, whatever names you're giving to them. Here's the king and the queen. And did you know that the king has very little power? The king has so little power, he can only move one step at a time. One step at a time in any direction, but one step at a time. Did you know that? You know who's the big mover on the board? Mama lady, yeah. Big mama. She's the queen. She can shoot out any direction, any length of space. She can do anything she wants. And of course she can get caught too. But she can do anything she wants. And her primary objective is one thing. To take care of the king. Her purpose is to take care of the king and keep him safe. Keep him from being taken. And the whole game is centered around that. And if one side loses their king, does the game stop? Now, as long as there are men on the board, the game goes on. And then what happens? You go after that king with all your might, all your power. Now, did you hear what I said? If one king is taken, the game goes on. Is that true? See how much chess you know? When you capture a king, you have won the game. When you capture the king with your men, you are the winner. You don't have to go after the other king with the residue, the remnants. Because the remnants have no leader. The king, theoretically, is their leader. So, you see, as you're playing this game, you play it with a kid. And this kid is going to say, but Mommy, you can't do that. This is what we have to do. This is what the queen does. This is what the king does. You see, they are very one-pointed. You, while you're learning the game with your child, are thinking of what you're going to make for supper, wondering what time your husband's going to come home, realizing that you're going to go out tonight, and did you iron his shirt and his pants and your blouse and your skirt and so forth? Have you got everything all ready to go? Oh, my goodness, you got a hair appointment in just 20 minutes now. How are you going to tell your son that you got to quit the game? Well, that's real easy. Son, I have a hair appointment in 20 minutes. Let's continue the game when I get back. Okay, Mommy. You see, honesty, forthrightness. But my point is this. You play that game and you play it well. You learn the rules. And you handle it beautifully. Right now, each of you are ready for the rules of the game of being relative. Being untouched by the rest of the world. You have not arrived at the point yet where you can be your number one. Because you don't know how to be number one. You will, very shortly, but you don't know how. You don't know how to live in a world in which you are the only person. Because You're living in a world with many people. You don't know it, but all these people you have created, and you love them very dearly. All these people are people that you have given life and breath to, and they're wonderful. But you're not ready to release them. It's that simple. You're not ready to release these people. These people are in your world. Let's just start with your mother and father. How well have you released them? How well have you released them? Well, you've done a fair job. You left them at home and you went off to do your own thing. So that's a good start. What about your brothers and sisters and your nieces and nephews? Perhaps your own children. Have you released them? Have you gone off and done your own thing and been untouched by the fact that they're doing whatever they're doing? Well, that's a good step. Okay. What about your friends? Have you released them? Oh, easy. Is it? What about your teachers? What about your peers? By peers, I mean the people you grew up with who were learning situations for you. Have you released them? Have you released the fact that they used to call you names and that irritated you so much? Have you released that? Or do you still have in the back of your mind, if anyone calls you, "Oh, Junior, oh, Junior, Junior, come out and play," and you hated Junior? Not because there was anything bad about it, but it seemed to be a demeaning term. "Oh, Stinky, come out and play. Stinky, come out and play." And why did they call him Stinky? Because one time he had a mess in his pants. And he still played with the mess in his pants, and he stunk. And so they called him Stinky. And they didn't mean it unkindly. It's just like Butch or Stinky or Buddy or whatever names people give to other people. And all your life, you have, whenever you hear the word Stinky, you think, you know, that's what they used to call me. And you're hung up by that. You don't know you're hung up by that, but you are. I was describing to Ellen yesterday as we were driving to town how so many people have hang-ups that they don't know they have. That some people who are unable to find good in life are unable to find good in life because at one point their parents had a big knockdown, drag-out argument that the kids heard about. And they said, "I wish we had not had any kids and I could separate from you right now. I just don't love you anymore and I don't want to be in this family. I don't," and or she to him, "you know, I'm getting out of here. You just take the kids. I don't want anything to do with them. They're not my idea in the first place. It was your idea to have kids, you know, and da-da-da-da." And it doesn't matter what they say. But the anger in their voice and the word "their children," anger in the voice and the word "their children," their children feel unwanted. They feel miserable. They feel very sad. Now, the kids don't know they have this. They don't know they have this condition because of their parents or because of something. All they know is that they can never be happy. No matter where they live, they can't be happy. No matter what job they have, they can't be happy. No matter what relationships they have, they can't be happy. Because in their life, they have this dirty linen. They have this memory of what was said about them, and perhaps not even about them. But they took it for them. And they have lived in bondage to those thoughts all of their life. Perhaps you've done it yourself. In some cases, I know you have. But when will you release it? When will you let that go and say, "I am a good person," and move on and be a good person? When will you move on up into the uptown and be happy with yourself? Well, that's a good question. And probably the answer is never. And the reason I say the answer is never, because you do not want to face the fact that you are a beautiful person. Because somewhere in your background, it says you were not a beautiful person. somewhere in your background, you were abandoned by your parents mentally or spiritually or physically or whatever. And you feel unimportant. You feel useless. Now, that's not a very happy thing. But we are not bound by those unhappy things. We are not bound by those conditions that limited us when we were children. We can release them right now. We can release them right now and say, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. And everything we do, we like. Now, this week, I would like each one of you to open the door for yourself. Open the door for your friends here. I would like each one of you this week to be so generous, just outgoingly generous in a tremendous way. Do everything for everybody else. Do everything for everybody else. I know what I'm saying. Do everything for everybody else. Live your life this week as though you were a blessing to everybody in your world. Live just as though you care about everybody in your world that you've created, whoever they may be, whatever the circumstances may be. Live in the idea that you like yourself and you like everybody in your world. And be a generous, loving person to them. Give whatever you can to them. Give your assistance, your guidance, your love, your support, not picking on them, saying you're stupid. But whenever they have a need for anything, you rise up and give it to them. What's going to happen when you do this? When you do this, you will expand your own inner consciousness to such a degree that you will be able to be much more of the master that you are. Because he who would be master of all must first what?
Servant.
Must first, see, you all know that. You must first be servant of all. And if you cannot be servant of all, if you think that you are too good to serve others and do things for others, you won't make the stride. You won't make the step. Now, John and Anita are sort of fanciful, and they're serving the meals with their napkin and saying, now at the meals today, and the rest of you have done something similar to this, but not quite with the outgoingness that they did. Now, were they being humble? Not really. They were just being actors, and they acted well. Now, what would it be to really be humble? To really stand up there and say, Sylvia, I know how you like your potatoes prepared, and I have prepared your potatoes tonight just the way you like them. Ellen, I know how you like your beans. You like them soft and gentle and still in the pod, that's the peas, and neatly. And so I have made those just for you, Ellen. And Anita, I know how you like a salad that is really a full meal, and I have created that just for you. And Ingeborg, I know how you have a great appetite for many things, and I know what your special things are. And I have gone to your garden, and I have taken out of your garden those things that you treasure so much. You see, it's kind of old now. But, okay, but the effort was there. And John, I have gone into your room, and I have looked in your menu, that is in your book of cooking menus, you know. And I saw the page that was the most used, that was the most rubbed down and cleaned off and wiped off because you kept spilling things on it while you were cooking in front of him. And I have made you that dish. Do you know what that dish is, John? Tell me what that dish is.
Beef stroganoff.
Exactly. Exactly. Beef stroganoff. Exactly. And it is. Exactly. Beef stroganoff. I can see the picture in my mind, can't you? Mm-hmm. Delicious, isn't it? Mmm. Yes. I was in Henry's yesterday, and I saw a box of beef stroganoff, and I thought of you. And it's wonderful. But you see, when you tune in to yourself and others, you can do it. You can do it. So, as we are doing these things now, this week, let's just see how much we can really be servant of all, not obsequious, not kissing people's feet, but being a servant, not quite like Stephen, you know, Mortimer, you know. Mortimer. Stephen was the servant on stage with John, remember?
Yes.
They put on a little skit. And Mortimer was a very obsequious servant, wasn't he? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Whatever you say, sir. Well, we don't have to go to that extreme. We just be sincere, with sincerity. Share this now. And after 1 week, and I see what we have done after 1 week, we'll make the next step. And the next step could be the step with your number one, or it could be an intermediary step leading up to it. But we'll see what you have wrought in this time, what you have done to yourselves and about yourself and with yourself. Because you're not stupid, but you're trying to apply principles without knowing what the principle stands for. If I say to you, you're the creator of your world. Oh, yeah. If I say to you, every person in your world you create because you enjoy them and you love them, and everything they do, you approve of. Oh. Because if you're the creator, you created them doing it, you must approve of what they're doing. So that makes you think again. And when it makes you think again, what it makes you think is that, how have I been investing my creation? Have I been investing them with the opportunity to do what they want to do or to do what I want to do? Oh, do you want to live or you want to die? Who, to whom is that question being asked? To the practitioner, to the minister, not to the patient, not to the friend. The practitioner is saying, do I want this person to live or to die? Which is either way perfectly okay. And if the person hears it, that's okay too, because he's your creation, and you create him hearing it, and you create him reacting in a certain way. But you don't ask a patient whether they want to live or die. You don't ask them. You're asking yourself. You're asking yourself, am I going to effectively speak my word and manifest wholeness, or am I going to ineffectively speak my word and not manifest wholeness? But that's not the point. Am I going to speak my word and manifest a release from this condition? Which is fine too. But that's not the ideal. The ideal is that we're masters and we create everyone else masters, living eternally in this body and all the other bodies that we live in. But that's nice. We are in charge. We are the only ones that are in charge. So, this week, put these causes in motion. This week, like yourself, which is nothing new than we've been doing, but apparently we didn't do it well enough. Like yourself, and be humble and serve everyone. Everyone. And serve everyone here, and everyone that you read about, and everyone that you write to or talk to on the phone. Everyone. Treat everyone with that same respect and sincerity. You are the boss. You are the master. You are the creator. You're even the creator of Ellen, who is your boss. Because you're creating her, having you do whatever you want to do. But it has to be her decision and not yours. But for you, you're creating your world, doing everything you want it to do. And it has to be your decision, not your world's decision. Because your world's decision, without motivation, goes along status quo. And if the status quo is leading it to destruction, then that's where it'll go. If the status quo leads it to perfection, then that's where it's going to go. And you have to make that definition, that determination. So, are you ready for that? I think you are. So, after 1 week, we will see what has happened. I love you. And I see it done.
I love it.
You could have said it louder, you know.